You're listening to the Sketchnote Army Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rohde, the author of the Sketchnote Handbook and the Sketchnote Workbook, and this is the podcast where I chat with sketchnoters and visual thinkers and try to understand what makes them tick. This episode of the Sketchnote Army Podcast is brought to you by the Sketchnote Idea Book, the sketchbook designed for sketchnoters. Equipped with a no-bleed, no-show-through paper, the Sketchnote Idea Book can take almost any marker or pen you can throw at it. Learn more at sketchnoteideabook.com. And now, on with the show. Hello, friends. I know right now we're in a very challenging time in the world, with the coronavirus pandemic happening, and it can be very distressing. I wanted to mention a few things we've created here that can maybe offer a little respite and a moment of joy amidst all these challenging days we find ourselves in. First, for something to listen to while you're at home or wherever you may be, we built up a collection of over 50 Sketchnote Army podcast interviews over 6 seasons, and you can listen to those anytime you like at sketchnotearmy.com/podcast. Secondly, we have the Sketchnote Army Slack, something we've been emphasizing recently. It's an online chat tool, and it's a place that we've created where you can chat with other visual thinkers about sketchnotes, visual thinking, or whatever's on your mind. We've even got a self-care channel there if you need to talk about some things to help yourself out. You can join the Sketchnote Army Slack for free at sketchnotearmy.com/slack. Please sign up for the Slack channel, and we'll talk to you there. Thanks. Hey, it's Mike Rohde, and I'm excited to bring you this interview with Jason Barron, a designer who sketchnoted his way through an MBA program and turned it into his book, The Visual MBA. You'll love our discussion about Jason's path into visual thinking and how bit by bit he turned a little sketchnote experiment into a successful Kickstarter and then a best-selling business book. Enjoy the discussion. Hey, everyone. I am excited to have my friend Jason Barron on the show. Jason, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Sketchnote Army podcast.
Mike, it's a pleasure to be with you. This is awesome, and it's an honor to talk with you today.
Well, and the same from my side as well. I'm really excited for lots of different reasons that we'll get into in the discussion that we're going to have. First, tell us who you are and what you do.
So, yeah, my name is Jason Barron, and I am a designer by trade. So I started as an interaction designer and became a user experience designer. And so that's something you and I share, mm-hmm, Mike, mm-hmm. The UX field. I work for a large nonprofit organization, mm-hmm, and I've really been focused on product strategy, how to make products more effective, mm-hmm, for organizations, and primarily digital products. Okay. And of course, the whole visual thinking concept and idea has been huge in my life, which we'll talk about. But recently published a book. It made the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list called The Visual MBA. And that's what I've been up to.
Well, just wrote this little book that's a New York Times. That's huge. That's awesome. I'm so excited for that. And we'll definitely get into that. But first, before we get into The Visual MBA, which I'm excited about, I would love to hear, what is the story of your entry into visual thinking? I think I've sort of pondered this, and I think this is what ties us all together. Hearing these stories is really fascinating for other visual thinkers and maybe people that are considering, you know, stepping into this space.
Exactly. I'm sure it's similar to you and others that are listening to this, that visual thinking didn't just all of a sudden happen. Ever since I was younger, I was always kind of doodling or drawing. And a lot of times it happened in places I shouldn't, at least at the time, maybe in class, doodling. And so for me, I've always sort of seen the world in pictures and in visuals. That's sort of how I've always understood the world ever since I was a kid. And I grew up in a family that was heavy in education. Both of my grandparents graduated from Harvard. My mother graduated from Harvard. I had a brother who was super smart, and for me, I was sort of the child who, you know, was drawing instead of studying, and for me, I just understood the world differently through visuals and understanding or making connections visually instead of I still love to read, But for me, as I see something, I can understand it visually. And I've found that I've been able to, regardless of who I'm talking to, executives who are heavily focused on business, I've been able to convey visual ideas in a way that they understand. And it, I've found that, you know what, I'm actually not the only one that understands the world visually. I think most people do, but it's just how we've communicated historically has been just through the written word, mm-hmm. or just verbally. And I think we're seeing through different trends. I mean, if you look at the success of YouTube and other visual mediums, a lot of people are resonating with those because it's communicating something visually. And so mm-hmm. For me, it's always been that way. And after I got married, my mother-in-law bought me this Moleskine notebook. It was a pocket-sized notebook. Mm-hmm. And I would just start capturing a lot of ideas in that notebook. And as I had mentioned, user experience design is very much a visual skill. Mm-hmm. And I would capture wireframes and other concepts and ideas within this Moleskine notebook and just any thoughts that I had. And it was actually like kind of like this freeing tool to me that I was able to have this little thing that I could carry around with me and just throw out some ideas and draw and sketch and throw out wireframes and then go back and remember. And so it was sort of this journey when I started gathering these tools that I could use. And one day I was sitting at work, and a good friend of mine, his name is Ben Norris, he talked to me about this idea of sketch notes. And it was he was a follower of you, Mike, and he gave a presentation internally at work, and he talked about the idea of sketch notes, and it was about an hour presentation. And it was like it just completely resonated with me. It was like this thing that I had been kind of seeking for. And it was interesting. It sounds a little silly, but it was almost like I had permission to, like, that there were other people like me, and I had permission to take notes visually, and it was okay. And there was other people that were doing it, and that, you know, there's a practice behind it and some organization behind it. And so that presentation was huge for me. It really kind of blew my mind about, wow, this is something that other people are doing, and oh, this is actually how I could do it more effectively. And I'm just like a hugely indebted to you, Mike, on you writing these books and coming up with the idea of sketch notes and really helping people all around the world kind of unlock that ability of thinking visually and capturing ideas visually. So I just started sketchnoting from there, and just heavily sketchnoting. Clayton Christensen came to my work one time to give a presentation, who I'm just a huge fan of. He recently passed away. He was a Harvard professor and yeah, you know who he is. And he gave a presentation. I sketchnoted it, and a lot of people were like, wow, that is so cool. Like, and so then I started sketchnoting work trainings, and I was just blown away by the fact that I could remember and recall these little minute details about these work trainings that, I mean, who remembers work trainings, right?
You know, like you usually try to forget them mostly, but
that's exactly right. So after I sketched it, I would burn them. No, I'm just kidding. No, I, you know, it was awesome because I could recall these little details. And then I would start sketchnoting books I was reading and these other trainings. I went to a Stuart Diamond is a professor at Wharton Business School. He taught negotiation. He has this book called Getting More. It's a fantastic book. I think all of Google's employees are required to read it, or they were in the past. Fantastic book. Anyways, I sketchnoted one of the trainings from Stuart Diamond, and a Korean publisher somehow picked it up. And so they actually had me illustrate his Korean book, The Getting More in Korean, which was really kind of cool. But this whole journey with the visual thinking and sketchnoting and you writing your book and me getting some insights from that, a ton of insights, it feels like this journey has sort of been unlocked over time. And one thing I try and convey to people is you don't have to be an artist. And I know in your book, the Sketchnote Handbook, you talk about that. You don't have to be an artist to be able to sketchnote and to think visually. And so everyone I talk to is like, you know, I'm not an artist. I can't do that. I'm trying to break that to say you can absolutely try it and see how effective it is for you to recall information, no matter what it is. It's just, it's fantastic.
Wow. Well, that's an amazing story. I'm very honored that that the impact of the books had on you and also Ben, who I know. He's probably someone I need to get on this podcast soon. That's I don't know what to say. It's really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thank you. I mean, seriously, it has been a huge, huge benefit to me. And everyone I talk to, I always point them back to your book. Like when I got interviewed for a newspaper, I told them about your book. I said, you know, this is where you learn about sketchnoting. I have, you know, you as thanking you in my book. And so anyways, I'm sure all your podcast listeners have your books, but if they don't, they should absolutely buy them.
Well, that's, and we'll definitely talk about your book. And I think people who I've shown your book to like flip out as well, which is kind of cool. like this circular thing that's going on where something that I did, you know, a few years ago had an impact on you. And then you're able to do something that's having an impact on other people, right? It's this cascade, which is kind of cool to think about. So maybe this is a good time to shift into the story of the visual MBA, because it is kind of a journey, right? I think it started differently than it ended up. So I'll leave it at that and let you tell the story from there.
Yeah, it was a really fun journey. You know, up to that point, I had been sketchnoting and I knew how effective it was. And so naturally, when I got accepted in the program, I went to Brigham Young University's Marriott School of Business. Mm-hmm. It's a top 50 business school. When I got accepted, my natural thought was, you know what? I want to sketchnote. And then the intimidation of 2 years of classes sketchnoting kind of hit me too. But I was like, you know what?
I'm going to go for it.
I'm going to go for it. And so I didn't necessarily at that time think, hey, you know what? I'm going to put this in a book. I kind of thought, hey, maybe as a slight possibility, it might have crossed my mind, but the sheer daunting feeling of trying to capture everything just, you know, it wasn't necessarily reality at that point, but I was just thinking, well, you know what? It would be really cool to do. And I'm going to start. And so I started sketchnoting in class, and I was using, you know, analog tools at that point. The iPad Pro hadn't come out yet. And serendipitously though, the following month after I started my program, the iPad Pro was announced and then released. And so I bought the iPad Pro, and then I started sketchnoting on the iPad Pro during the program, which was really helpful at that time, because I was able to move some things around as I was going in class and things are coming out so quickly, and I'm trying to move things around and work quickly. And so it was really, really helpful and a huge blessing that came out at that time. So as I was sketchnoting in class, a lot of the students were kind of looking over, and it's funny. I don't know if you feel like this, Mike. Yeah, you probably don't, for sure you don't, but when you're around a lot of people that don't know what sketchnoting is, I almost feel like a little self-conscious, you know, that like I'm in this business class with 70 super smart people and they see me drawing in class, like what, you know, what's that perception going to be? And, you know, it's just, but I was like, you know what, forget about it. I don't care. I'm just going to keep drawing. And what I was really surprised by is people would like look over and like kind of like do double takes, and they'd be like, that is awesome. What are you doing? Tell me what you're doing. And so I'd explain about sketchnotes, and I was just surprised at the interest that people had in sketchnotes, and what they would say to me was during the program, they're like, hey, when you're done with the program, you should put in a book. I'll buy it. And for me, it was like, wow, maybe I could sell this. And I wasn't thinking big, like, hey, maybe this could be something huge for people. It was really, hey, maybe I could actually sell this to these 70 students, and maybe I could sell it to the class before us. So there's 70, and then the class after us, so there's another 70. So, you know, maybe I could sell 200 books or something like that. I was like, man, that'd be pretty cool. So in class, again, I was just sketchnoting while the professors were talking. And to me, it was really beneficial, as you talk about in your book, just being able to recall the information. It wasn't that I was doing this to write a book. It wasn't that I was doing this for any other purpose, but to really recall the information for myself later. Because when you're investing so much money in a program, you want to be able to actually get the benefit and remember. And so as I would go through class and as I would finish a class, I'd go back to my sketch notes and I'd be like, oh yeah, yeah. And it really helps solidify that. Mm. There's been a lot of studies about going back and recalling information, how it helps solidify it in your mind. To me, sketch notes helps tremendously in that regard. And so as classes would get over, I'd go back to my notes and remember stuff. And then as time went on, you might be in UX design, you know, building prototypes, wireframes prototypes, mm-hmm. before you actually do development is really helpful. And so I did a paper prototype. I took a chapter, essentially a chapter, it was a class, and I printed out that class as a chapter, and I had a cover of the book, and it was printed on printer paper, mm-hmm. and glued together with like a glue stick. And so straight up very rough prototype.
Love
but,
it.
But I showed some people and they're like, this is really cool. But one thing that was missing was some additional text explanation with some of the illustrations. And so I went back and that was a huge insight for me. That was tremendously helpful. And I wouldn't have gained that if I would have just like printed the book and then got feedback later. So very rapidly, I made those tweaks and changes and then printed a chapter again and glued it all together and showed people. And people were like, this is awesome. And they gave me some additional feedback. And then I went back to, you know, Amazon has this create space where you can do print on demand. And so I sent, you know, the InDesign files to create space and printed out a book. It cost me like $20. And it was several chapters of the book. And again, I got feedback from people and tweaked it and refined it till I felt really comfortable about it. And my goal was to try and get this book printed by graduation, because I figured once graduation is over, kind of people's excitement kind of dies down, so not as many people would want to buy it. And so I contacted a printer in Seattle and said, hey, I want to print this book. I've never printed a book before. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm so grateful for this woman on the phone. She said, hey, here's an idea for you. Why don't you do a Kickstarter? Kickstarter, you could find out exactly how many books you need to print. That way you save on printing costs, because you could try and get 200 books printed, but you might only sell 100. And the more books that you're printing, obviously, your
prices go down.
Exactly. Your prices go down and then your margins go up. And so I thought, okay, cool. Before graduation, I put together this Kickstarter and I had never done a Kickstarter before, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but I did a Kickstarter. I set it for 28 days as far as the time limit. I set my goal for $7,000, and I think it was within a day or two, it had surpassed the goal.
Of course.
Which was so exciting. Like, I was like, holy cow. And after the 28 days, it had raised over 1,000% of the goal from,
that's amazing.
From 40 countries. Yeah, I was just blown away. Yeah, so from 40 countries around the world. And I was just shocked. I couldn't believe it. And I was so happy, and my wife and I, and then it hit us like, okay.
Now we got to deliver.
Exactly. And so that was just insane. Like, how do you, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books to logistically get printed and then
distribution,
ship overseas. Mm-hmm. But we did it. We spent, I wanted to make sure that I was delivering as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So right after I had gotten all the backers, after the 28 days, immediately I went to a printer. I went to a local printer actually who had done books and got a really good deal on the book printing, and well, relatively good deal. I mean, it wasn't like amazing, but it would have been easier to print locally than it would have been to print in Seattle and ship and everything else. So it worked out great, and I got them all printed and then started shipping them out. And that's really like the fingers crossed. Like, I really hope, I did some prototypes. I tested with some people. People said it was really cool. But you don't really know until it goes out into someone's hands what they think about it. And so I shipped out the first batch and kind of had my fingers crossed. Like, okay, I really hope people actually enjoy this thing. And And the reviews started coming in from people all over the world that they loved it. And to me, it was like, okay, like that's, I've created something that that people actually find value from, you know, and it was just a super satisfying feeling. And I was just so grateful that, you know, some people wrote back just saying, hey, at first I wasn't quite sure what this was or whatever, you know, or, you know, I thought this might've been, you know, some kind of sales thing or whatever. But when I got it, I just realized like how amazing this was. And I'm so grateful that you created this book and thank you. And anyways, just super satisfying. And the journey has just been, has kept going from there. And so shortly after the book went to the Kickstarter, I had some publishers reach out with an interest in buying the rights to the book. And, you know, I talked to you, Mike, about, you know, what you would recommend mm-hmm. since you had been with publishing and you had mentioned an agent who you had worked with. And so when he reached out to me and we talked through it, he was really enthusiastic about it. And he had talked to some publishers about it. And he said typically it takes several weeks to hear back. But within a very short period, I think it was like two or three days, a publisher came back with an offer. And anyways, that was Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, who published Lord of the Rings and Mary Poppins.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and they published it. And anyways, it's just been this really, really fun experience and journey that all started with just this idea and possibility and all born from sketchnoting.
Well, that's really interesting. I wanted to remark as I was listening and just sort of piecing together visually in my mind while you're talking about it. It was really interesting the way you iteratively, like that's like the perfect design thinking process and the process that you and I both know and preach. And for those who are not in the design space, basically what Jason talked about is the process that we ideally use every day, right? He started with, first, I'm doing it for myself. Well, this is crazy, but I think I want to do it because it's valuable for me. And then he started, you know, exploring with his classmates who are potential customers, and they encouraged him. They thought it was cool and sort of gave him a little bit of a boost. And then he started prototyping and prototyping and prototyping. I think those prototypes probably made a huge difference in getting it ready for production, right? And then, and really refining it in a way that made it so delightful for people that bought it in the end, right? They are benefiting from all that hard work and the prototyping and the feedback that you went through, that had you not done that, there might have been things that you didn't do quite exactly the same. And it might have been satisfying, but not maybe to the same degree. So all that work. And then it just kept on, you know, a little bit farther you would step in and it would expand and get a little bigger. And suddenly you've got a Kickstarter and now you go to the printer and you know, you're not coming in wanting 100 books. You want, you know, thousands of books. That's a really great position for you to be in from a leverage perspective to work with somebody. And then that led to the rights being sold and being published by this classic publisher. Like, just such a great story from beginning to end. And everybody sort of wins in this deal, which I love.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And You're totally right. I mean, I firmly believe in the value of testing something, and I'm sure people's feedback of, hey, you're missing this piece here or that piece there. Mm-hmm. Sure, it might have been a couple people that mentioned that, but that translates into hundreds or thousands of people that would have that same exact feedback or same exact friction in finding value in the book. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, definitely applying those design thinking principles. You know, typically you and I are thinking about it in a digital space, but right. Also being able to apply it to a physical space is just as applicable.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that the principles work and, you know, having a user-centered mindset, because ultimately the user is the one who's going to buy this thing, right? When you,
right.
You know, people are listening, think about the software that you really find delightful and easy to use. It's very likely that somebody actually did tons of work researching and figuring out what people liked and didn't like. They tested it. They observed people using it, not just getting feedback, but observing them, because people don't tell you what you want to hear. They tell you what they think you want to hear. But by observing, you actually see what they really think, right? So I think this can be applied to even in a sketchnote or trying new things. Like, I mean, a lot of things that I've goofed around with doing this podcast was a total experiment, right? Let's try it. Let's record it. Quality was bad. There's all these things we wish we would have done better. Well, we're going to have to do that in the next one. And you just keep revving it and trying to improve it. And I think that's true in any experiment. Like even taking the chance to try sketchnoting is sort of an experiment, and you get a chance to, it's amazing. You get a chance to improve your process every time you do it, which is, we're so fortunate, right? That we can do this iterative process over and over again every time we go, and we can make it a little bit better. And you can see that progression if you look over time, which is really satisfying. Like, and you know, I haven't thought about it that way for a little while, but now that we talk about it, I totally see it looking backwards.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So describe for people, we've talked about what the book is. Describe for people, like if you could describe it visually, we'll of course have a show note link so you can see it. But I mean, just for a minute, describe like what does the book look like and how is it laid out and what is the information? How do the sketch notes look and how much text is there and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So the book is laid out chapter by chapter, really based on the order in which I took the classes. So the very first class I took in my MBA was leadership. So chapter one is leadership, and it goes through, and each chapter brings out those main core ideas. And the one thing I love about sketchnoting, and Mike, you talk about this in your book as well, is it's about taking the big ideas. Mm-hmm. And what I love about it is you're taking this idea and you have to kind of break it down conceptually to a visual. It really helps you kind of like dissect the actual essence of the idea, which I think a lot of people resonate with when they're consuming something or reading something. They don't have to, you know, there's not all that complexity about trying to process it. It's actually kind of distilled down and, oh yeah, like I can understand that. And because it's laid out in this way, it's been broken down in this way. So, you know, there's some kind of visual from the sketch note that I was taking during class. Mm-hmm. And then where needed, I would add in an additional, you know, paragraph that would explain that concept to people so they could understand that. So essentially each chapter going through that individual class, it was a progression of the teachings or readings or whatever from that class. And then, so that goes through the whole book. And then on the final part of the book, I actually tie it all together based on the journey of starting a new business. Mm. So I actually kind of lay out from start to finish where you're sort of, the first part is looking at and coming up with ideas and understanding who your audiences are and those type of things, which, you know, even though it's starting on that journey, that might be a later chapter in the book, which it is. However, I kind of lay out, if you were starting a new business, here's kind of where you would start in the book, and it helps people progressively see where they would find information. Mm-hmm. And I got a note from someone on Instagram from Indonesia who started a company, and they said that they were following the book. They bought the book and they're going kind of page by page looking at, you know, how to start a business as they're building their business, which was super cool and satisfying to see. But yeah, that's how the book is laid out, is again, the progression of throughout the class and taking those key concepts and putting them in there.
And I mean, sketch notes really is a mix of visuals and text. So having a paragraph of text or some descriptive totally is in line with that, right? It's depending on what you need to do, maybe a visual is a better way to explain it, and maybe text is a better way, or maybe it's a combination of the two depending on what you're trying to achieve, right? So that's
right.
I think that's wise. That was wise feedback and great feedback to expand it and sort of hold it together in some senses with the text or tie it together. And I think it's interesting too. I didn't think about this until you started describing like the structure. You're sort of in some ways taking advantage. There was probably an instructional designer or a team of instructional designers that are very, very likely put that course together in a certain way for effectiveness, right? And so by capturing that, you just naturally are taking advantage of the structure that they brought you through because it works. And now it's just being reapplied on whoever reads the book if they follow it in that process. And I also love the fact that you're sort of, I would suspect that some MBA programs could get pretty theoretical. And the idea that you lay out almost like a map of how to start a business and then point back to the theoretical parts of the book, the more theoretical parts of the book, but you're tying it to a practical application. Like maybe that's not always so easy to find in some MBA programs or in some business discussion, right? It can get so esoteric that it's hard to get the practical application. And it sounds to me, from the way you're describing it, that this is sort of maybe the way you approached it was to provide some practicality as well as theory as in the same, you know, book.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point, Mike. And absolutely, that's one of the things that I'm trying to convey with the book and also the Instagram channel. And my hope is that people take this and do something with it. That a lot of people have an idea, or man, I wish I could start something, or I've just you know, have this idea to start this business with my family or myself or whatever. My hope is that they take action from it. And to your point, esoteric and so much of school can be theoretical, and it's interesting concepts. But really, what my hope is, if anyone remembers anything from reading the book, is now to move. Now move forward. You took this. Now make something happen. Start something. Get your hands dirty and go to work and adapt and adjust and refine the way you work, and go back to the book as a sort of a reference guide. But it should be something where you're really acting rather than just consuming.
That's I love that. So much that we, you know, are provided often don't have those application points, and I do like it when an author sort of bridges that gap between the theory and the practice and now makes it something that's useful, right? That's actionable. I think that's really great to hear. And I think the other thing I was sort of wondering about, and I kind of remembered from more of the, I guess probably more of the Kickstarter stuff, is you involved your kids in this. I remember, didn't your Kickstarter video have your kids in the production and in the video with you? Is that my memory right?
Yes. Yeah. That's a great memory. One of the chapters in the book, one of the courses I took was Startup Marketing Essentials. And in that, it actually talked about the importance of having a positive personal connection with any kind of marketing or communication that you want to spread. And so for me, that was actually the reason why I did that, was directly pulled because of that class. And so I involved my kids. I had my two kids who at that time were 7 and like 4 or 5. And so I had them, and they're basically, they're sitting at this table and they're talking about how their dad doodles during class, you know? And it's almost like, you know, kind of flipped, where the kids are kind of the mature ones and they're like kind of concerned about their dad who's doodling during class. And you know, we know you're not supposed to doodle during class. And so they're kind of opening this short snippet of video that's kind of promoting the Kickstarter about this. And so then it cuts over to me and I start talking about the book, and then it cuts back to them, and then they're like, okay, I understand. And you know, this is, you know, basically like, oh yeah, I get it. And hey, maybe we can start a business. And so it was just kind of this cute, fun video segment that involved them. And it really helped. People wanted to share it because of that. And they thought it was really cute and fun. And I guarantee that it wouldn't have, if it was just me explaining it, it really wouldn't have had the impact that it did, because it had that positive personal connection with the kids. And I'll tell you what, though, it was really challenging getting them to focus. I have this B-roll where, you know, my son, Jonah, he's got his head on the table, you know, like he's so bored, or his eyes are rolled back in the back of his head, like he's, you know, and we're trying to like bribe him with like, you know, we'll get you some ice cream after this if you just kind of focus. And, you know, it's just,
man,
we had to do a ton of takes on that. But again, it was definitely paid off, and was a fun thing for them too, to kind of look back and be a part of the book. And when I shipped out all the books, I had written out a thank you to everybody that backed the book. And it was a picture of my two kids who were in the video, and they had written a handwritten thank you to, you know, on this card that's printed out. So they're writing this little thank you, and it was shipped out with every book, and kind of full circle, you know, showing people that we all appreciate, from my whole family, them backing the book, and that it means so much to all of us.
So what do your kids think of this? Like, they talk about dad writing this visual book thing for business, or like, what's their conception of what you've done and what you're doing? Are they aware of it? Are they part of it? They think you're cool or crazy, or I don't know, have you maybe not asked them that question?
I think every kid thinks their parents are crazy. But you know, they think it's really cool. I think for me, I'm really grateful that I'm seeing teachers that are talking about sketchnoting and implementing sketchnotes in their classes. Like, I'm just so impressed with that, and I love that. For me, they see that it's okay to draw during class, you know, mm-hmm. and it's okay for them to capture ideas or sketchnote during class, or but just the idea of thinking differently. Like, it's, to me, that's where I think they think it's really cool, is that it's not a typical book. It's something visual and different that was successful. And they also saw that, you know, I've talked about in the past where at times doing the book too, it was, even before I published the book, it was kind of discouraging because it was so much work and you mm-hmm. never know if it's how it's going to pay off and if it will and if people like it or not. But they saw that I kind of persevered through some of those challenges and those self-doubts that we all have whenever we're working on a project. And
oh, yeah.
I basically told them, like, hey, you know what? We started this thing. We're going to finish it. And I think they saw that, you know, we finish things and we make things happen. If we have a vision, we just stick with it regardless of what the end result's going to be. There's a ton of value in just sticking with something and doing it, seeing it through to the end. So I think that was pretty cool for them. And one small thing, actually, I haven't mentioned this yet. I was going to put this on Instagram, but each one of my kids, in somewhere in the book, they did a small, teeny little illustration. Mm-hmm. So in the chapter, at the beginnings of the chapter, there's sort of this background where it shows some illustrations and things. Well, each of them had a part in drawing kind of their own handwritten illustration. So they all had a part in the book individually, which they think is so cool. They go back and look and say, hey, I did that little diagram, or I did that little thing. And so it's been really fun.
That's pretty neat. I love that, the way you've tied your kids into it and made them part of the journey in a way that they could understand and accept, and that they think is pretty cool. I echo that too, the idea of having kids think differently, that it's okay to do different things, and having that a little bit more of an open mind toward how things can be formed and put together is really good for them. Because if they get too rigid, you know, they just sort of follow the thing, and sooner or later they're going to get stuck. So seeing,
yeah,
look what my dad did. Like, if he did that, what could I do? Right? Maybe they come to that point, some point in their lives, and that's, if we're even doing sketchnoting, I think for kids in school, having that alternative way to think about things, or another way, another tool in their toolbox that they might have been prohibited from in the past, is pretty exciting. So I'm totally with you there on education.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, for me, when I learned about sketchnoting from Ben and from you, it really unlocked something. It was like this, I can't really explain it, but it really helped me understand things and work through things more effectively. And so I think that is going to be tremendously helpful for kids. And I think it's awesome that you're continuing to teach people about sketchnoting. And for me, it is another tool, but it's also really helping unlock creativity mm-hmm. and understanding and progress with people, because it's a new way of looking at things and understanding things and processing things that can be really effective, more than, you know, a lot of people even realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what keeps me going every day. When I do these things, when I have these opportunities to teach and share, that's what drives me. So
it's fantastic.
Great to hear there's more people out there that have that mindset. I know there's a ton of people out there that have that mindset. So that's very encouraging to me, for sure. So how is the book and all the stuff you're doing, how is it being expressed now? What are you doing? It sounds like you've got an Instagram channel and you're doing some things. What are some ways it's getting expressed in what you're doing now and into the future?
So I'm continuing to do sketchnoting, and right now I'm expressing it publicly through the Instagram channel. Mm-hmm. I'm also in the works and working through a YouTube channel to explain some business concepts visually. And so that'll be coming in the future. Between those two areas and just generally sketchnoting and working through ideas visually, that's where I'm at right now. And it's really exciting. It's really fun. It's invigorating. But yeah, on Instagram, it's at Visual MBA. And that's where I'm working on publishing some different visuals on different business concepts and ideas. And I might listen to some kind of, might be a podcast or other things that I'm sketchnoting, and I'll publish up there. And so hoping to continue to, again, helping people act, helping people take action mm-hmm. on different ideas through visual communication.
That's pretty cool. I can imagine where, I mean, you sort of laid the foundations in visual MBA. It would be interesting now to say, okay, let's talk about self-driving cars. What's the business model for self-driving cars? And at what point will they, you know, what are the challenges they face? And let's look at it from a business perspective like an MBA would. And then you could like go through that process and explain it. So it's sort of like taking the principles and then applying it to a specific thing would be really fascinating.
Yeah.
As an educational way to look at it, both visually and conceptually. And, you know, you might spark insights. I think, isn't it Robert Reich that does some of this kind of stuff where he talks about economics and uses drawing or something like that? I have to look that up. It seems that he's done some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty interesting application.
For sure. Yeah. And for me, it's I'm trying to figure out the best way to do it, you know, and that's what's kind of held me back a little bit is I want to do it well and, I'm trying to figure that out, but also like you just have to kind of dive into things and improve over time. And so I have sort of this tendency to try and do things perfectly. Hmm. And, that's one thing I love about sketchnoting is, you know, you have the permission to be rough and it doesn't matter. It's still just as effective. And so I have to kind of have to battle that, you know, that perfectionist attitude and just like dive in and do a YouTube channel and
see what happens.
You see what happens. Don't worry about it and improve it over time. It doesn't have to be perfect right away. So that's kind of what I'm working through right now.
Yeah. Sometimes it's interesting, like even like caveating at the beginning, like, well, this is probably going to be pretty rough. Like just saying those words, now you're suddenly in a different place and everyone sort of has different, even for yourself, probably more than anybody else.
Yeah.
You have a different expectation, right? And then you're just like, well, this might not work. I think that's a, you know, and see what happens. I think that's Seth Godin that says this might not work. That's kind of exciting. I've said that before when I do sketchnoting, there's always a chance this could really go badly. And it's happened before. I've had sketchnotes that have gone sideways or I've just not been in the right frame of mind, like whatever reason. It doesn't happen very often. But even in those, I learned something and I capture something and I can remember from it. Probably, right. You know, so... And that's where I mentioned to you before, it feels like sketchnoting in some small way is like a performance art, in which sort of reminds me that maybe actually taking courses on improv might be very valuable for a sketchnoter. In addition to learning how to listen, like understanding the concepts of improv could be very helpful because in some ways you're doing performance art and you're just finding ways to improvise in the moment. And maybe the idea that you had didn't work, but maybe that actually pushes you in the direction to another idea that maybe was better all along. So that's where it kind of gets fun, like where it's sort of happening. Like the most exciting moments I can recall are when I just got into the zone and like stuff starts coming out. Like, I don't know what's going on, man. Like all the pieces are, I've sort of prepared myself as much as I could. You know, I've got drawing skills a certain level and I get into a zone where the information is coming in and stuff's going on the screen or the page and like, how is this happening? I don't understand this, but I'm right. not going to stop it. So that's right. a really fun place to be.
Absolutely. No, that's a great perspective.
We'll definitely put links in the show notes to the books and the channels and all that kind of stuff for sure. Because I think people are going to want, if they don't own the book, they're going to want to buy it and they want to see the stuff you're up to because it's cool. But I want to shift again and talk a little bit about tools. You mentioned briefly before that this the iPad Pro sort of timed really well to the beginning of this course. But I want to have you step back and say, tell us if you still do analog stuff, which I guess you may. What are some of the tools you like there? And then switch over to the iPad and talk about apps and other goodies that help you do the work you do, how to do the sketchnoting you do.
So as far as the sketchnoting piece with analog, for me, I love the Moleskine notebooks. The pen I love is the Pilot Precise V5. Mm-hmm. That's been my go-to. Actually, that's been my go-to like since, you know, I was in high school, like drawing. I just love it. I haven't necessarily found anything that like really, at least for me personally, that really flows as well and works with, you know, how I work with drawing mm-hmm. or sketching or sketchnoting. So anyways, the combination of those two really have been super helpful. And I love the analog feel and just the kind of the timelessness of it and that feeling of history. You know, with digital, you're doing it on a digital device, which is great. You can be efficient, but with analog, it's almost kind of like a richer experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I love still doing stuff, you know, in analog. As far as like, I'll also do just general. I think it's good to do different mediums. Mm-hmm. So I'll watercolor. So I like have a Moleskine watercolor book that I'll, you know, do stuff in watercolor. I don't do watercolor. I'm just learning. And so anyways, just exploring different mediums and things. But for me, again, Moleskine with the Pilot Precise V5. And then I'm super excited for my sketchnote idea book. You know, so I backed Mike's Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and I'm super excited about that and using that and so just putting in a plug for you there. That'll be really cool to get. And so as far as digital, the iPad Pro, I use the larger size. So I use the 12-inch, mm-hmm. and for me, it mimics, you know, basically legal size paper. I'll use the Apple Pencil, obviously. And then the app I use is paper. It used to be by 53, but now I think 53 was bought out by WeTransfer. Mm-hmm. So it's paper by WeTransfer. And one reason why I like the digital process as well is it's really good for production. So I noticed, like, if I was doing my book, it was a little bit easier to, you know, export the files, and then it was just a little bit more seamless of a process, rather than having to scan it or take a picture of it, whatever, and upload it. It was just sort of an export, and then I could throw it into an InDesign file. So for the quick process of production, you know, I really like the digital, but for kind of the timelessness and the history of, you know, SketchNote, the analog is fantastic as well. Mm. So I'm not an either or type of person. I think leveraging both analog and digital can bring a lot of value to sketchnoters.
I agree. I've sort of called myself a sketchnoting agnostic. I'll take whatever is available if it's a back of an envelope or and I like both analog. I always think it like it just gives me more options, and then I can adapt the option to the best use and purpose for that thing I'm trying to do. And not get stuck in the mindset of like, well, you know, I've got this hammer, everything looks like a nail, let's hit it. Like, having options is really nice to have.
Yeah, definitely. It really is.
Interesting. I'll have to try the Pilot Precise V5. I haven't used one of those for a long time. I've seen them before, and I thought, I know there are a few people who really love those, and I think I'm going to have to go do some shopping. So,
yeah.
And then as far as the Moleskine, are you still with the pocket size, or have you gone with a bigger size? Like, what's the size you like?
So, I like the pocket size for portability, but I find for me it can feel a little constraining trying to get what I want down. And so I typically go with a little bit bigger size, and I don't have a problem carrying it around. I usually use the one that has the thicker paper.
Mm-hmm. The sketchbook.
Yeah.
I kind of made that same transition a little ways into my process. All the stuff that I started with was pocket size for the same reasons. It was very portable. But then I found over time it was nice to have a little bit more space to stretch out and explore some things. And so I think that's a natural process. But I still do like those little pocket things. Traveling, when I travel, I like to have a pocket Moleskine or a Leuchtturm that I can carry along and do sketches in. I definitely like, again, I'm probably agnostic on size too, because I use all the different sizes. That's really great. And, you know, for those of you who haven't tried to Pilot Precise V5 for a while, I think we're all going to go do a little shopping. I think the nice thing about those kind of tools, like some of the tools I like, the flare pens and gel pens, you could just go to like a office supply store and find many of them. So if you're you're doing sketchnoting and your pen blows out or runs out, you can just go to Walgreens and get another one. There's definitely a benefit to that.
So definitely.
So I'm going to shift again a little bit here, and I want to talk a little bit about tips that you might have for someone. I sort of frame it this way. Let's assume here's someone listening. They're getting into visual thinking or sketchnoting or graphic recording, one of those things. They really enjoy it. They're just like us. We're sort of getting sucked into it, and we just keep wanting to explore it further. But maybe they've hit a plateau, or they just want to have some guidance, like they want to make a jump. and they're looking for tips and suggestions and ideas from you, who's been doing this a little bit longer, what would be three things that you might share with someone? They can be either philosophical or very practical. Just share those with the listeners.
Okay, great. Yeah, so my first one's going to be more around philosophy here, and so it's just it's to be okay just doing it. Don't worry about it being perfect. And again, in your book, you have that kind of visual of a dog, like one is kind of rough, one is nice looking. It's still a dog. It still represents a dog. It's okay. You know, you don't have to be perfect right away. Just jump in and start sketchnoting. So any of your listeners who may not have sketchnoted before, or maybe have a couple times and might have gotten discouraged or whatever, just jump in and do it, and commit to listening to some podcasts or TED Talks or whatever, and start working on it, and don't worry about it. The second one I would say is to build a visual library, and that's sort of a practical one. But what I mean by that is draw something every day. Draw a simple sketch of a couch or a TV or a car or a can of soda or whatever it is. Just practice drawing something, so that way you have sort of a visual library. Because I found at times as I'm sketchnoting, I'll think of something and then I'll think, oh shoot, how do I draw that? Or, you know, and so it kind of takes just a little bit of time trying to like think about how I'm going to actually represent that or whatever. But if I'm working on that myself, continuing to build a visual library and continuing to learn how to draw in different perspectives. And then I would say the third thing, and there's been a lot of studies about, you know, instruction and helping people gain or really get a grasp on information, and that's to teach it. And so I would say the third one is to promote sketchnoting and tell people about it and share it. I mean, what's really cool is we live in a time where you have Instagram and you have Twitter and you have these ways of sharing sketchnotes. And so teach it and promote it and share it with people. And it really helps catch fire and helps people see it. And even if you're not a great artist, it just does not matter. It helps give people permission, you know, to try stuff out. If they see something, they're like, that's really cool. And it's not perfect, but it's kind of a really cool concept that they're drawing stuff and putting it out there. And it helps give other people some motivation to dive in as well. So those would be my three. So jump in, get your visual library, and then teach it and share it. And those are ways that you can really grow as a sketchnoter.
Those are three great tips. And I think the last one particularly, you know, that points back to, if I hadn't written the book, maybe Ben Norris wouldn't have taught it at work and wouldn't have turned you on, right? You think about that,
exactly,
that cascade that happened there. And we all had a little part in that. And now we're continuing to spread it further. So all you need is that one touch, and then it could turn somebody on that you wouldn't have imagined, that suddenly gets excited and it's a great epiphany for them, like it was for you.
And absolutely,
and who knows where that'll take us, right? I mean, that's the most fun, I think, around my book, is just seeing where people have taken it, physicists that are using it in ways I could never have imagined, you know, like talking about neutron scattering, or, you know, like I couldn't even have imagined of the idea, let alone the application. So seeing it appear in these really strange, beautiful ways is really fun to see. So
that's so cool.
Super, super cool. And it's just another, you know, there's another generation coming. So we need to prepare them and teach them. And if you're one of those people that's listening and getting excited, this is awesome. We can't wait to see what you come up with. And thanks for listening, and go look at all the show notes so you can check out Jason's stuff. And with that sort of being sort of our final step, how do we get a hold of you? What's the best way to reach you and see your stuff? And if somebody wants to get in a discussion with you and ask questions, how would they do that?
So the best way right now is on Instagram, and I'm also on Twitter at Jace Barron. But I'm primarily in Instagram, but I will respond to anyone, any comments on Instagram or on Twitter. And as I mentioned, I'm working on that YouTube channel, and so that'll be another great way to connect as well. But yeah, that, you know, and I love keeping the conversation going. And so if anyone, any of the listeners are want to talk about ideas or challenges that they're running into or anything at all, I'd love to talk and geek out about, you know, visual thinking. And this has been such a fun journey. And so again, Mike, I really appreciate you seeing that, you know, as you were talking about, hey, what if I didn't do this book? Like that might not have helped trigger Ben, who triggered me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when you were doing that book, it was challenging and maybe discouraging at times.
Oh yeah.
But again, like that's just a testament to, like, you know, you persevering, and because you persevered, it blessed my life and I'm sure thousands of other people. And so any of the listeners that are listening about to this right now, just make it happen, push through the discouragement, and you can really help a lot of people. And who knows what that'll be.
Yeah.
But there's untapped potential by people just acting and pushing through discouragement. So, if anyone wants to chat, I would love to talk on Instagram or Twitter.
Awesome. And then, of course, go and buy the book. I know it's available on Amazon and all the other places. Visual MBA. Is there a website for the book that someone could go to?
Yeah. It's thevisualmbabook.com as well. So I'll share those links with you.
Okay,
as well.
Great. I think it's probably not going to be hard to find. I know the stories I've told is when I received a copy at work, I just had it on my desk and people like, what the heck is that? And they would grab it and it would disappear for a while and I got to buy this thing, and they would give it back and someone else would do the same thing. I feel like it happened 3 or 4 times in my office of 30 people.
That's really cool.
So people really resonated with the book. So, I mean, unsolicited encouragement. So if you have any interest in a crossover business and visual, which, you know, I think most people probably do to some degree, and this is cool, approachable stuff. Go buy the book, support Jason, and enable yourself to think about business in a way maybe you hadn't before. So, man, this has been so great. Thanks for making time to chat and to share.
And no, thank you.
This has been fantastic. So for everyone who's listened to the show, I hope you've enjoyed this discussion, and we will be back again with the next episode of the Sketchnote Army podcast. The Sketchnote Army podcast was created by me, Mike Rohde, and brought to you by Rohde Design Studios. It's produced and edited by Alec Polianis of Amp Creative Studios. The theme music was created by John Schiedemeyer. Special thanks to Chris Wilson for his hard work on show notes. To support the creation of this show, I invite you to buy one of my books, the Sketchnote Handbook or the Sketchnote Workbook. You can find the books on Amazon or go to peachpit.com and use the code RODY40 for 40% off. Please share this podcast with other visual thinking friends and be sure to leave a nice rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast listening app so others can find the show.